Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
You know, I don't know during moments in time if people know when they're a hero, when they're not. You know, I don't know if people living during the Renaissance were like, hey, it's a good day. We're in the middle of the Renaissance. What an amazing time to be alive. You know, I don't know that people recognize those things in the moment. I don't know if the founding fathers sat around and said, hey, let's start a new thing called the founding fathers.
Right.
We'll be the founding fathers of this. No. You know, I think it's just people usually doing the next right thing. But you need courage and you need ability.
Yep.
And you need that all to come together at the right time. And that fits today's guest better than about anyone that we know. One of the most courageous, one of the most intelligent, and oddly enough, in that mix, one of the most humble, which those don't usually go together, but they do for today's guest. He's the host of The Brian Artis Show, Dr. Brian Artis.
Yay!
There he is.
Thank you for having me on. Very excited to be here at Flyover Conservatives. I love your platform.
We love you. We really enjoy these interviews. And I think every time that we do a show, it's always so informative and it saved so many lives.
Yep. Without a doubt, more than anything I've ever been a part of in my life, anything we've ever done, conversations with you have had a direct connection towards lives saved.
Yep.
I mean, if we did nothing else from the time we started this show, it would have been to have had you on, especially one of the very first ones when people are going into the hospital. They were like, you know, just come on, gobble up all the remdesivir they could get because that's what they were told was going to help them. And you changed the trajectory of so many lives. Yep. And there are so many people that are alive because of you educating them. Here's how you deal with your doctor. Here's how you deal with the institution. Here's how you break free of that, educating them on what they were actually putting in themselves. It was worth starting the Flyover Conservative Podcast for that, even that one episode. Because we got so many emails, so many text messages, so many things of people that had a loved one in there and that they got out and that they're alive now and doing well.
Well, I really do appreciate that. And the opportunity for individuals to build audiences or have a following and then allow people like me to come on and spread some hope and truths has always been a blessing to me. So thank you for you and both of you creating this platform to be able to educate more and inspire people. I love it. So it's been a great honor to me, and it's very odd, actually, that everywhere I go, every week, somewhere I'm traveling and speaking somewhere, but it's amazing to me how many people, including medical professionals, will tell me, do you have any idea how many lives you've saved worldwide?
Wow.
And I'm like, no. I mean, I really don't. How would I ever know that? All I know is I'm continuing to try to educate, warn, and inspire, particularly around saving you and your loved ones' lives in hospitals.
Yep.
But I do know we have physically put together advocacy teams that work directly with me to help get people out of hospitals. So I know we physically save those lives. But as far as numbers worldwide, God, I hope it's many, many, many. This has been a relentless effort to try to warn the world of what was being perpetrated behind closed doors of ICUs without family members being allowed to go in. And it's been atrocious to hear the devastating, horrific events that have led to the deaths of people like Scott Sherriff's daughter and other people around the world, including my father-in-law in February 2020. It just goes on and on. But it's been a very honoring, humbling 3 years, I'll tell you that. So
it's a great model it's a good model for people to look at, though, because of what you personally went through. It's like, you know, maybe somebody who lost a loved one because of drunk driving or something, and they take that and they put it in towards, you know, something that makes a difference. You know, you went through the loss of your father-in-law. People respond to those things a lot of different ways. And it seems like, you know, it's just a good model for everybody because you took that and really focused that on, like, you know, no more, and took it personal, you know. And I think that's the thing to really take away from your spot. Instead of just getting bitter and whatever you could have done, you really focused it on chopping the tree down.
Oh, and the truth was, I was very, very angry and I was very bitter. But to actually witness my father-in-law's passing in front of me and actually looking through the medication schedule and their prognosis as one day went by, you could actually see how they were destroying his body with the protocol day by day. And it was identical to what you could read was the toxic effects and published effects of remdesivir 3 months later in May, which is when Anthony Fauci declared remdesivir was the only drug to be used in all hospitalized Americans. So if I had never watched what happened to my father-in-law three months earlier and saw every day what they were doing to him and the lies they were telling us, and the deceptions they had behind those lies, I would have never, ever been able to speak so confidently to what was going to happen to individuals' lives if they go into a hospital and get that drug into them for 5 to 10 days. So I think God really set it up and let me witness that so that I could, unfortunately, I hated it. I was very angry the whole time and I missed that guy, but it has been a massive, motivator to try to at least help as many people as possible not experience what me, my wife, and her family have been experiencing now for 3 years, which is loss at the hands of murderous professions and poisons.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. This is available at the Flavor Conservatives merch store. It's Fauci for Gitmo.
That's where he belongs.
our daughter made that. If you want to wear this when you go to your next checkup or a medical facility, that's a great conversation starter. It's a great icebreaker if you're speed dating or those kind of things. You want to know where somebody stands.
There you go.
You can wear the Fauci for Gitmo. But I do think there will be and needs to be accountability for those things that will come in the future. And
I agree.
I wish that we were way in the future looking back on this right now, but we're not. We had a conversation together in Nashville. And fortunately there are doctors though, that were angered by your message, even though you've been right, they fought it, but are coming around. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
About all the research that you've been doing.
Kind of late, but better than never, but it's happening.
Oh, what's really great is I'll just tell you, never did I actually start speaking out, educating, researching, warning people because I needed medical doctors to like me.
That wasn't your main focus and drive? You weren't looking for friends?
No, I didn't want the medical profession to even be involved in my life, actually. I was so upset with the fact that institution and all their colleagues killed my father-in-law.
Yeah.
I wanted the whole world, when I started speaking out, to hate and distrust all medical professionals. Mm-hmm. What I found shocking was that as a result of me doing these interviews from my home, 40 to 50 interviews a week, using a publicist that you guys know, to just get me into the media to actually educate people about the published information about remdesivir and don't go to the hospital. Do not trust that profession. Now, I did that for 4 months straight all by myself just to warn lay people. I didn't care about medical doctors or the medical establishment. I didn't care. I didn't want anybody talking or trusting or putting faith blindly in medical professionals.
Yep.
So what was odd to me and humbling to me was the fact that within 4 months of me speaking out by September of 2020, at that point, when I stopped doing my interviews, all these medical professionals were reaching out to me, asking me to come to their conventions, please come to our events and help educate doctors and lay people about the hospital protocols. And what I'd learned later was that those first 4 months where I was doing these presentations from home, none of the medical profession knew who I was. But it forced them to go look at the documents I was quoting because they were working behind the scenes to help people with this pandemic in their hospitals they were working for. It was only when they saw the presentations I was doing and showing the research papers that they themselves had to go look at it. And when they did, they knew I was right.
Yep.
And then they started producing telemedicine platforms online to keep people home. And they were calling me going, can you help us articulate to audiences that these telemedicine groups are available?
Wow.
Sure, I can help you there. So I did. And I've been doing it nonstop and have testified in state capitol buildings. Me and Peter McCullough have been in 15 different state capitol buildings, testifying side by side with legislators, state reps, you name it, for this whole last 2-3 years. Imagine the irony that as the medical profession was absorbing me into their narrative – to help them with their platforms. It's interesting that they were the ones vehemently initially wanting to dismiss my discussions and concerns about the real weapon of COVID is weaponized synthetic venoms all around the world that I'm not confirming, scientists are confirming in countries all over the world. It was amazing to watch them vehemently say, do not listen to the manic chiropractor. Do not trust him anymore. His documents are a waste of our time is what they have said. I've actually had the same medical professionals all of you at home are seeing as heroes scream at my face that I'm full of BS in front of everybody. And I would just sit there respectfully and go, thank you for all your help the last several years saving lives. I never needed their help. I didn't want their help. I didn't even want y'all wanting their help. I wanted y'all to stay home and not trust any flipping medical narrative ever, like ever again. Don't do it. Don't do it. They're lying to you. Don't do it. And what's going to happen, unfortunately, and it's very exciting, it would be eventually. I knew it was going to come around. Eventually, just like the remdesivir studies, the medical profession wasn't aware that this was a dangerous drug until I showed you. And lots of medical doctors say, if it wasn't for Dr. Artis, we would have never known the protocols were killing people. Yeah, you're welcome. The retired chiropractor figured that out, but it wasn't me. I think God set this up so that I could see it and then articulate the warning to audiences. Because if I was a medical doctor, I probably would have had faith and blind trust in my own profession. And I wouldn't have went and looked for the deception. No, this whole, my whole adult life has been set up, I believe, for just such a time as this. And I never got involved for the medical profession to trust me or like me. I only got involved to protect the innocent that I know the medical profession worldwide has been deceptively misleading audiences for decades. But anyway, so this is very exciting. It's very exciting now. I think I might have shared with you guys, but last week, January 28th, Dr. Chetty, MD out of South Africa, was able to confirm that in long hauler COVID patients that weren't responding to care, they sent stool samples off to some researchers in Italy. And they ran the stool tests and found that in the long hauler COVID patients that won't recover, they were having neurotoxic side effects, neurological problems, blood clotting problems, and cell death, like kidney failure, liver failure. They were finding all these markers of tissues being injured in the long hauler patients. When they ran the stool samples, guess what they found? Replicating in their intestines and in their feces, snake venom peptides, sea snail venom peptides, and starfish venom peptides from the ocean. Every single venom I have been screaming to the world for the last year is what they are using to make people sick with COVID. And then when you go towards the shots and my warnings about the shots, when I said nobody should trust these shots, they have venom in it, snake venom in it, what I said, y'all should all avoid it. It was amazing how many people were like, no, there's not venom in there. You know how many of these medical doctors that said that have never looked at the research studies that were published by the people who made the shots? Because these two words, Stacy and David, are in every one of the research papers. These two words, snake venom, are in the research papers that they're injecting into mammals to do their mRNA gene therapy. They say we use snake venom phosphodiesterase to cleave your RNA and your DNA, to insert whatever mRNA we want you to have inserted into your genetic. Okay, I don't know how to, some people said that it's semantics, I'm using words that aren't accurate. Okay, when they say snake venom is in our research, in our experimental shots, in our vaccines, for 13 years they kept publishing that in every paper. I don't know why you won't go look at it.
Right.
I don't know why you won't refuse to look at it. They told you, and the two people who created these COVID-19 shots, the mRNA ones, they just received a $3 million royalty check for their mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And they work at the University of Pennsylvania. Go look up their royalty check. They just got it. Go check it out. At the University of Pennsylvania, it's two scientists named Kathleen Carrico and Drew Wiseman. And out of thank you to Judy Mikovits, I'm going to go ahead and throw out someone else's name who's in their papers as an author and a researcher. His name is Robert Silverman. And she'll tell you, don't trust that guy either. But these two individuals, Drew Wiseman and Kathleen Carrico, published in every paper since 2009 to do mRNA gene editing therapy, being funded by Anthony Fauci's department at the NIH since 2009. They use snake venom phosphodiesterase and a substance called RNase that is also from snake venom to damage your DNA or RNA to insert their mRNA of choosing to change your genetics. That's gene therapy. And for those of you who think that's odd, have you two ever heard of CRISPR technology?
Yep.
Yep.
Do you know what CRISPR even stands for? So CRISPR technology, most people know this. They believe scientists figured out that, David, if you, for example, had a hereditary, they believed, heart disease.
Okay.
Marker or gene. Let's say they said your mom and dad both had heart attacks, so we believe you have a heart attack causing gene inside of you too. So what they are proposing in science with CRISPR technology is that they could stop you, David, from ever having a heart attack like your parents. And they're going to delete out of your DNA the genes that cause you to develop a heart attack.
It sounds like a great thing.
Yeah.
So they're like, we're going to delete this gene. Yep. And then we're going to insert another gene in its place.
Okay.
That technology is called CRISPR technology. It is spelled all capital letters, CRISP, C-R-I-S-P, with a little R on the end of it.
Right.
Y'all need to look this up. There's billions of dollars being pumped into the field of CRISPR technology to delete your genes that cause disease that God gave you, your DNA, and insert some other gene into it. Go look it up. Did you know the capital letters CRISP? The reason why it's all one word and then R is little. You know what crisps are? You know what they are?
Nope.
Well, y'all should just go on Wikipedia and look it up, everybody at home. Look up right. CRISPR.
See, producer Colton can pull it up as we go here.
And you will learn CRISPR technology, crisps, are snake venom genes.
Oh my gosh.
CRISPR technology is to delete human genes they believe cause disease, and CRISPR technology is inserting snake venom genes into your own DNA. That is what CRISPR technology is. Isolating snake venom components and injecting them into the human DNA. Now, everyone knows what CRISPR technology is. Sure. We are investing billions and billions of dollars into developing genetic engineering, like you see there, we've talked about on your show even. This is how to get mammal cells to make venom, how to get bacteria cells to make venom, how to get yeast cells to make venom. And they've been working on this for a long time. All the future of medicine is moving towards getting the human being's DNA to manufacture venom proteins called peptides that change your physiology, that they are now making drugs from around the world to change your physiology to address symptoms. Eventually, all medicine will be, we're going to inject humans with the instructions that their cells now can manufacture the drugs made from venoms. They're going to manufacture their own venoms to lower blood pressure, for example. I mean, there's 22 million Americans right now swallowing lisinopril every morning for their blood pressure.
22 million.
And that's been sold since 1981. That they're swallowing snake venom every day. Now, instead of making you swallow the snake venom in a pill form, they would rather inject you with mRNA technology to instruct your cells to make the ACE-inhibiting drug venom-based compound. They want your body making it. They don't want to have to manufacture it anymore. They want your body to do it. This is where all future medicine is moving. How can we get the human body God created to now be bioengineered to have venom-based reptile DNA inside of you from a snake to generate and manufacture your own drug peptides made from venoms? That's really all it is.
There's not a whole lot of things in this world that are universal, but most people, especially women, but I say most in general, have an aversion to snakes.
Yes.
Like instinctively, you don't have to train that in.
No.
You know, it could be, you know, and the, you know, the majority of them aren't poisonous.
Right.
But if there was a tiniest little snake that even came in right now, this interview would be over and you'd be in
no
the next
it.
Level.
No, yeah,
there'd be a new hole in the ceiling.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to show a slide presentation here. And when I show you some of the statements from the scientific pharmaceutical invested research world, that is not how they see snakes or venomous creatures. They actually publish. If we don't make venom-based vaccines to protect and perpetuate humankind, viruses may eradicate the entire human species. They believe venom-based vaccines will save the planet. That's what they believe. And they even put it in writing. It's pretty disgusting.
Wow.
All right. Well, buckle up, Slaver family. Here we go.
Yeah.
So what I've prepared here for today's show is lots and lots of people around the world have lost their children or their grandchildren during pregnancy after having received these COVID-19 vaccine shots. It is now reported by Dr. Jim Thorpe, Dr. Christiana Northrup, by Judy Mikovits and others, that on average worldwide, it's an over 80% pregnancy loss after getting the COVID-19 shot worldwide. Women are miscarrying in every single trimester. 80% of all pregnancies have failed and ended up in miscarriage after getting the COVID-19 vaccines while pregnant. So this is a very disgusting, very disturbing statistic that a lot of people are publishing about and reporting on. In my mind, I had to see it somewhere in research that I was looking at before I would ever speak on it, how I could confidently state and show they know how to create miscarriages, even with vaccines, and they absolutely know they can do it with venom in the shots. And I will show you what they've published.
Can I ask you a question in the way you said that? You said they know how to create miscarriages. I think a lot of people would look at this, you know, these scenarios of things that are happening, whether it's, you know, myocarditis and all these different things you're seeing pop up, with athletes and different things, as maybe the developers have this attitude of, well, if you're going to make an omelet, you're going to have to break some eggs. Like it's regretful collateral damage towards a greater good.
Yeah.
But your phraseology was a little bit different. It almost implies in intent from the jump of being an anti-human or anti-humanity process as the end game from the beginning. Is that, or am I putting too much into that?
All right. So I actually like your conclusions better. Mm-hmm. Let's go with Bill Gates in 2010 or 2011 when he did his TEDx talk. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Did you see this, where he actually said out loud, it's still on the internet, you can look at it, he says, in order to solve the world's threat of global warming, which is dangerous to the planet, in order to save the planet, we have to reduce the population of the Earth by 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. And he turns and looks at the crowd and he goes, and we already know we can do it. And we can do it with vaccines. Okay. How does he know that they can already do that? You want to know how he knows? They've obviously experimented already. What happened in India when they unleashed their Gavi finance-backed anti-whatever viral vaccine they released all throughout India? How many people did they create infertility in as a side effect of that vaccine agenda? And then Bill Gates was banned and his Gavi group from India.
Yep.
And then what did we find with the recent Andy Wakefield documentary he just created, where they actually were under the guise of a malaria vaccine agenda in Africa, they actually were causing infertility in those women that were receiving the shots they thought was for an infectious disease, when in fact they were injecting them with components they knew would create infertility. So do I think they're doing that? No, they know they're doing it. Are they vocally speaking and putting it in writing that this is a goal of theirs? Yeah, it is. They believe there's too many humans on the planet that are using up resources faster than the Earth can actually replace them. So they're putting in initiatives using vaccine agendas to end overpopulation. That is what they state. So here's this TEDx talk you got up on the screen right now, but he actually physically says we need less people to save the planet. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way we're going to actually save the planet from climate change, which is a ridiculous notion anyway.
But it's amazing how much grief you get for not having degrees in some of these specific areas. And man, he's edified, and he's just a computer nerd, and he's given the reins to everything over there without question. That's an odd thing to me, but I guess if you're paying for all the research, the research is always going to find, you know, the answers the funding wants.
Man, that's a good point.
Yeah, this is actually one of the reasons why in every research study, I always look at the funders first. So whatever they publish or whatever they're researching, I always scroll to the very bottom, and most good researchers do this. They want to know, how biased might the information be based on who funded work to be published? So, oh my God, almost everything in relationship to ivermectin and COVID that was found to be negative, go look at the funders. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation was the funder for all of them. It's listed, Bill Gates Foundation publishes. Why would Bill Gates and Melinda Gates Foundation publish and pay for a study to slant the world's view of ivermectin? I could just give you one reason why. You just showed him standing up on stage in 2010 or 11 saying we can reduce the population of Earth with vaccines.
Yep.
Really? Well, if people trusted ivermectin, they would have never gotten COVID and gotten sick, the majority of them, and they would have never signed up for the vaccine agenda. So he needed them to doubt ivermectin, stay sick with COVID, so that they would sign up for a vaccine agenda to help reduce the population of the Earth. And why in the world anybody listens to this guy about health? He didn't even graduate college. Why in the world do you listen to this guy? He's never sat in an anatomy class. He's never treated a patient ever. I'll just say it here too. Donald Trump's never treated a patient either. Why do we listen to him and care about what he says about health and vaccines anyway?
Great point.
Go listen to doctors. Go listen to doctors. If you want to know how to build a hotel, go talk to Donald Trump. If you want to know how to build software for a computer, go talk to Bill Gates. Mm-hmm. Why in the world do we care what they say about health? They're not healthcare professionals. Why would we listen to them?
Or particularly healthy.
Yeah, or particularly healthy. True.
Particularly healthy. Yeah. So I would just say put the weight in the people who actually sit at bedsides with people, have done it for years, have applied principles of healing, have faith in nature and medicine. God, the greatest creation God ever created was the human body. If we could just stop poisoning it, intoxicating it with synthetic things, poisons, venoms, we are going to be way better off if we just put our faith in nature and what God put on this planet himself that we could take advantage of.
Totally.
Man, it's a word of the day right there.
That is.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
Well, do you want me to get you into
explaining? Let's do it. I'll quit derailing you.
All right, because we want to make sure we keep this within a window of time that fits on all your platforms.
Yes.
Let's do it.
I want y'all to tell me when there's only 5 minutes left, and I can skip ahead to some stuff and then make sure we fit in that time frame. So in order to explain how it is they know they could create miscarriages, there's a few concepts people need to know. What are the cells in the female's body that actually maintain a pregnancy? Wouldn't that be good to know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because if you destroy those, you can't maintain the pregnancy at all. You're going to lose it. And then what are they publishing in papers related to antiviral vaccines like the COVID-19 vaccine is? What are they looking at and what are they publishing as antiviral vaccines? And what are they making them from that they have published destroys those cells in the female body that maintain a pregnancy? Wouldn't you like to know?
Yes. I would.
I mean, the billionaire who's invested more money in vaccines and says it's the greatest investment he ever made, Bill Gates, was the return on vaccines. Mm-hmm. It's the greatest investment, he said out loud in an interview, brought him more money than anything else. That guy is saying vaccines are making him more money than anything else. He wants to get vaccines into the arms of people around the world, and he needs vaccines to depopulate the planet. I'm going to show you what they're researching as the solution to all future and current vaccines ever, because they publish what they're working on. They propose and publish all vaccines can be made from venom for all viruses, and they don't have to be virus specific. You just have to inject venom in everybody, and it will block all viruses from getting inside the cells, because venoms bind to the same cellular structures of all tissues that viruses have to enter through. Mm-hmm. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. And they said, because you don't have to create a viral specific venom-based vaccine, that means you don't need a flu virus strain venom vaccine. You can just inject them with any venoms and it will protect you from polio, the flu, SARS-CoV-1, measles, hepatitis B, all viral vaccines in the future can be venom based. And I'm going to show you the patents that they already have on them. It's pretty disgusting. They already know that they can do this on a large scale. So why do I have concerns that they could be using this same technology to cause miscarriages? I would like to show your audiences.
Yeah. Okay.
Number one, if you've lost a baby in a pregnancy after getting the COVID-19 shot at any trimester, you should contact your OBGYN after watching this. Share this presentation with them if it can actually be there, or get it off my website, however you want to get it. Get the information and then share it with your OBGYN. There's a test I'm going to show you can confirm the presence of these substances they know come from venoms that are proposed to be antiviral vaccines that deliberately cause a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And if that substance is in your body at any elevated level, how did it get there? Because Pfizer and Moderna didn't publish they put that in there. So we should start holding them accountable to find out how it got inside of you. All right, so we'll share a screen. I think your boy's going to manage that.
Yep, he'll put that on there. I'll tell people as well, if you send us a text at 40509, we'll put this on the screen as we go through there. 40509, text the word VAX, V-A-X. You're going to get a whole bunch of protocols. You're going to get a free book from Christiane Northrup. You're going to get a whole bunch of things that are already in there. But we'll add this link to these slides as well, and you can be able to look at them. And again, it's a take those in with you. We'll add that to the folder that you'll just, it'll be an auto reply. 40509, the word VAX, and it'll come right to you.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the, go, you know the thing.
We will shut you down. We will cite you. And if we need to, we will arrest you and we will take you to jail, period.
I wasn't thinking of the Bill of Rights when we did this.
But no amendment to the Constitution is absolute.
God actually spoke to me. He spoke about sacredness. He said to me, Kim, what I place in many, many people is sacred. And if anybody touches what is sacred to me, then it is the end for them. So what I've done in the United States of America is sacred. And there are people on every side that are trying to destroy what I deem sacred. And it's not going to happen.
This is the definition of criminal conspiracy, racketeering, and collusion. This is not a theory. This is evidence.
Because I have upheld this country to spread a light to the rest of the world. When you choose to go against the sacred thing that God put into the very heart and the soil of this nation, this was sacred to God.
This Reawaken Tour is literally what it means. It has reawakened the American heart.
Wonderful. Looking forward to it. All right, so are we ready to share?
Ready.
Y'all tell me when you're ready.
We got it.
All right, here's a QR code. You might want to scan that. That actually just puts you on our email list where I can email out our antidotes, our protocols, all the research that I'm learning and developing every week. I will not bombard you. I promise you. It's just to educate you. All right, so to understand how it is a baby is formed in the womb, how it is women around the world are losing their babies in utero during pregnancy, you need to understand this one substance called syncytium. What is syncytium? Every time I put up a slide, I want you to just look at the highlighted blue sentence and I will reference them. Syncytium is a type of cell. The muscle cells that make up animal skeletal muscle is a classic example of a syncytium cell. The term also refers to cells that are interconnected by specialized membranes like gap junctions, as seen in the heart muscle cells. They're actually called intercalated discs in between muscle cells of the heart. And then they're also found in certain smooth muscle cells, which are synchronized electrically in an action potential, meaning syncytium cells in the heart, for example, and in muscles, they create an action potential to stimulate with electricity nerves to contract the muscle all at once. That's what syncytium is for.
Okay.
Now, inside syncytium, you guys need to understand, how does syncytium play the role of pregnancies and miscarriages? I'm going to show you. In animals, which in research and science, they consider humans animals. Placenta, let's go down to the bottom of the screen. Syncytium is another important vertebrae. Syncytium is in the placenta of placental mammals. We're going to keep going. Embryo-derived cells that form the interface with the maternal bloodstream fuse together to form a multinucleated barrier called the syncytiotrophoblast. So when a man and woman has sex and the sperm fertilizes an egg, that egg is going to travel up the fallopian tubes, end up in your uterus, and then syncytium implants the egg up against the uterine wall. And the syncytium forms something called syncytiotrophoblast, which is like the Velcro, the glue that holds the placenta to the uterus wall. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's its job. And then blood is starting to be brought from the mom's body's uterus into the placenta through blood vessels. Syncytium signals to be made. Okay. The syncytiotrophoblast is key. It is created by syncytium to maintain a pregnancy. Syncytiotrophoblast is the epithelial covering of the highly vascular, lots of blood vessels, embryonic placental villi, which invades the wall of the uterus. Little bitty fingerlings enter into the uterus to establish nutrient circulation between the embryo and the mother. So syncytiotrophoblasts are signaled and made by syncytium telling the body to make this. And then the body will fuse the placenta with the uterus to receive blood supply and nutrients from the mother. Here's what it looks like. Amniotic cavity is where the baby's going to be developing in the womb. You'll see the actual upside down looking roof, or the rooftop looking piece of this image. Syncytiotrophoblast is on the right, but the rooftop shaped thing is actually the uterus lining. Syncytiotrophoblast, you see on the right hand side, is actually connecting to the mother's uterus lining. And then blood supply is going to come from there, get into the baby from there. I just want people to see this is what it is. Now, The outer layer of this is called trophoblast. The syncytio trophoblast lacks proliferative capacity and instead maintained by fusion of underlying the sticking of the placenta to the uterus wall. It's fused there by underlying cytotrophoblast cells. And that connection, that fusion, is assisted by a protein called syncytin, which Judy Mikovits has been screaming about for at least a year now, that syncytin, they're destroying syncytin to cause these miscarriages. Oh my God, here it is. This is where it comes from. It's a part of sticking the placenta to the uterus. What is syncytin? Cell-to-cell fusion protein makes cells stick together, whose function is best characterized in placental development. The placenta, in turn, aids in embryo attachment to the uterus and establishment of a nutrient supply. A few basic terms I want everyone to understand. Syncytium signals to the mother's body to make syncytiotrophoblasts. Since syncytiotrophoblasts can only Velcro up against the uterus to receive blood flow to the baby to help it grow, if syncytin's cell-to-cell fusion protein sticks them together. This is how these three things are very important to maintain pregnancy. So the baby receives nutrient supply like you see in this highlighted sentence. Syncytiotrophoblast. It states here during pregnancy, highlighted in blue, it secretes HCG hormone in order to maintain progesterone secretion and sustain a pregnancy. So if syncytium is destroyed, syncytiotrophoblast can't form, then you can't secrete HCG or progesterone to maintain your pregnancy. In every infertility clinic in this entire world who are helping couples who can't get pregnant, what's the one hormone they find in all of them has to be synthetically given to them to maintain their pregnancy because they can't make it? Progesterone.
Yep.
All right, so syncytiotrophoblast is in direct contact with the maternal blood flow that reaches the placental surface. It then facilitates the exchange of nutrients, waste, and gases between the mom and the baby's systems. We're catching a glimpse of what this is at the bottom here, drawing here of the uterine lining where the blood vessels are is the mama's uterus. You'll see syncytiotrophoblast and cytotrophoblast forming in her tissue to help start forming the placenta and then eventually a baby in the amniotic cavity you see there. Why is this important? Now it's time to start explaining how they know they can cause a miscarriage with venom-based vaccines. And there is snake venom in all the research papers that they published were used by Drew Wiseman and Catalin Carrico to create the COVID-19 mRNA shots. And now we're seeing miscarriages all over the world. This was published in 2017. It's titled Antiviral Activity of Animal Venom Peptides and Related Compounds. Now, David, you mentioned here a minute ago that if a snake went into the studio, y'all all run out of there. It'd be over. Everybody is conditioned to be deathly afraid of snakes.
It's just hardwired into the app, I think. Yep. It's an app that comes on your phone when you get it.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what's interesting is as we go through this, you're going to see from this paper in 2017, scientists around the world and pharmaceutical giants have been for decades trying to figure out how to make animal venoms as antiviral drugs and vaccines to solve all viral outbreaks worldwide, period. And they're going to take you through scorpion venoms and which viruses they're already making drugs for and vaccines for with scorpion venom to treat everything from HIV to measles to hepatitis C and B viruses. I mean, you're going to learn all about that. And then the snake venom section answers how it is they're causing the miscarriages. Are you ready?
Wow.
Yep.
Let's get a feel. This is 2017, Donald Trump's first year of his presidency. Let's talk about what they're researching and publishing. Why is there even looking to animal venoms as antiviral drugs? The pharmaceutical world and the scientific world states here, although there's a large number of compounds, antiviral drugs, that have been identified as inhibiting various viral infections and disease progression, it is urgent to achieve the discovery of more effective agents. They're admitting here their antiviral drugs suck. Furthermore, proportionally to the great variety of diseases caused by viruses, I cannot even believe they published this, very few viral vaccines are available and not all are efficient. Okay. Christiana Northrup would want to throw up. They just said here, there's very few viral vaccines available. Do you know how many vaccines Christiana Northrup and others have actually been screaming at the world? Children now are getting between the ages of 0 and 18. It's up to 72 different vaccines.
Yep.
Crazy.
They just stated here there's very few viral vaccines. Really, do you know every single vaccine given to children and teenagers is viral vaccines? How can they state there's few of them, and then they even publish they're not all that efficient anyway? Wow. Really? Well, then we should just stop that whole flipping agenda, don't you think? Let's just stop using vaccines if they don't work. Thus, they state, because drugs they have aren't working and there's not enough viral vaccines around. Thus, new antiviral substances obtained from natural products have been prospected or looked for, including those derived from animal venoms, venomous animals. Venoms are complex mixtures of hundreds of molecules, mostly peptides, short proteins, that present a large array of biological activities and evolved to target the biochemical machinery of different pathogens, like viruses, or host cellular structures. You are the host, and you have cells in your body. So this is a panorama of this review published provides a panorama of peptides described from animal venoms that present antiviral activity, thereby reinforcing them as important tools for the development of new therapeutic drugs. Really? I didn't know we needed venoms for drugs. All right. Why are they continuing this? We want to continue the narrative. They're setting the stage for why it is they're even looking into making venoms into vaccines. There are very few antiviral drugs commercially available, and those can induce severe and considerable adverse effects, especially to those patients receiving lifelong treatment for diseases such as HIV, which is a virus. Therefore, all these facts together have propelled that we go looking for new antiviral drugs, particularly from natural products. As they constitute, natural products do, they constitute more than 25% of the new drug prototypes approved in the last decades. Now, check out this next sentence. Among sources of natural products, animal venoms have revealed a great potential for drug discovery. Isn't that amazing that in science they call venom a natural product because it comes from an animal in nature?
It's like a vitamin or a supplement.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly how they're proposing it.
Yep.
And then it states here, despite the harmful action mechanisms of animal venoms, most of them have components holding potential medicinal properties to cure diseases. Really? I didn't know that if my wife had MS, I should just throw a rattlesnake in her bed and let it bite her, because venom cures diseases. Oh, you got rheumatoid arthritis? Oh, by the way, they already have patents for this, for rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune diseases, to have venom-based vaccines for those too. They're already creating this and acquiring the patent. Now, inside this study, I want to make sure we fit this into our time frame for this show, because everybody on every platform needs to see this.
Yes.
In this research paper, they start out talking about scorpion venoms. So I want to read to you what they state about scorpion venoms that they're researching. Paradoxically, biotechnological applications, biotech companies, are devised by the increased understanding of the action mechanisms of venom components. And therefore, many research works deal with the generation of new drugs based on the structure and function of molecules found in these venoms. Now, I want to bring your attention to something. They didn't say, David and Stacy, they didn't say a few research works. It says many research works deal with generation of new drugs from venoms. With the rapid increase in the number of characterized scorpion venom compounds, many, not a few, many new drug candidates have been identified as potential medicines to deal with what? Read it, Stacy.
Emerging medical global threats.
Wow.
Really? I didn't realize we were looking at scorpion venom to solve medical global threats.
No kidding.
In 2017 still?
Yeah.
2017. Yep. All right. Let's keep going. They show scorpions in the table. They show the scorpion venoms by name, the scorpion name, the component of their venom, the peptide name, and then the virus is the third column that they already have secured patents on to cure these diseases. So scorpion venoms are now being used. The first virus is abbreviated MEV. You can look at the bottom of this chart. It gives you the abbreviations and what it stands for. MEV is the measles virus. The next virus, scorpion venoms, are now being patented for to cure SARS-CoV-1. Really? I thought Anthony Fauci already funded in 2005 a study that beat SARS-CoV-1 with hydroxychloroquine.
Yep.
Why are we looking in 2017 for scorpion venom to treat SARS-CoV-1? I thought we already had a safe and effective non-toxic HCQ that already answered that problem and stopped SARS-CoV-1 before. Then they mentioned H5N1. Then they mentioned hepatitis B virus, then HIV, then hepatitis C virus, and then herpes simplex virus 1. I just want y'all to know something. The science and pharmaceutical world, look at HSV1 right there underneath viruses. They're proposing to make a scorpion-based venom antiviral vaccine for the herpes simplex virus. Do you know what the herpes simplex virus does? It causes fever, blisters, and cold sores on your lips. Why in the world do we need a venom-based vaccine from scorpions to address that? It's ridiculous.
Right.
Okay. That's what you know. That's what they're doing. Now they get into snake venoms. The snake venoms is going to be the answer for me, how I can explain perfectly they're causing so many miscarriages worldwide. So snake venoms in the same study in 2017, they state, some studies have reported the antiviral activity of snake venoms and their components against measles virus, Sende virus, dengue virus, yellow fever virus, and HIV. Thus, snake venoms are sources of promising candidates for new antiviral drugs. Inside of the list of individual venom peptides is one at the top of this highlighted sentence, the start of the paragraph at the top. It reads, the L-amino acid oxidases, abbreviated LAAOs. This is the component of venoms from snakes. The highlighted blue part, this one snake, abbreviated by Latin name TSV, dash LAO, this component of snake venom, seems to be the first snake venom L-amino acid oxidase reported to present antiviral activity. And I show the study that they're referencing, number 60, at the bottom of the screen. Because I want y'all to get a sense of this. They know that this substance from snake venom called L-amino acid oxidase was first proposed to be an antiviral drug or vaccine as early as 2003. You can see the publication at the bottom, 2003. That's 20 years ago.
Wow.
All right, so we're going to continue with this L-amino acid oxidase from this snake. I want you to see what they published in 2017. They said this component of snake venom inhibited HIV-1 infection and HIV's replication in a dose-dependent manner. That means the more venom we injected into the HIV patient, the less sick they got by replicating HIV. And then they stated, and it seems to act at nanomolar concentrations, little bitty amounts. It works at these little bitty concentrations by inhibiting syncytium formation. Hmm. They publish here that this snake venom component being offered as a solution to viral pandemics. I'm not kidding. They're about to tell you that here in a minute. They published that this thing, L-amino acid oxidase, inhibits syncytium formation. If you destroy syncytium, you can't make syncytiotrophoblast. You can't get the baby's placenta to stick against the uterus wall. The moment you kill syncytium, you can't make syncytiotrophoblast. Those make progesterone and HCG to maintain the pregnancy. And then this is what happens. The placenta starts pulling away from the uterus wall. There's no more syncytium glue to hold it there. And when it peels off, the blood supply to the baby stops, the nutrients to the baby stops, it can't get any oxygen anymore, it will die, and you miscarry. They know they can do this with vaccines. They know they can do it proposing it for antiviral vaccines with venoms. And they know there's specific published venom components that do it. All right. All of you at home who have lost a baby or a grandbaby during pregnancy or can't get pregnant at all, and have gotten vaccines ever in the future. I mean, Gardasil as a teenager, which is for the human papillomavirus. If you can't get pregnant, the key always with fertility clinics is putting more progesterone into their body. Well, I would want to make sure every woman that's lost a baby after getting the COVID-19 shot, I want every single OBGYN to order this test kit to test their patients with, to see if they have elevated amounts of L-amino acid oxidase, which is not a typical test for them to run, but you can get it right here. And I highlighted it. This is how easy it is to do that test. You can actually run it with urine test or blood samples, and you can look for L-amino acid oxidase, which L-amino acid oxidase they published destroys in syncytium formation. It stops it from being able to form, which will lead to women losing their pregnancies and creating infertility in people before they ever try to get pregnant. If this is in your body, it stops you from making it.
Wow.
Why are they reporting or proposing animal venom peptides to be vaccines for viruses worldwide? Well, I'm about to show you. This is what they published in their conclusions of this study in 2017. As a consequence of the scarcity of new families of antiviral drugs, pharmaceutical companies have strengthened their efforts to increase developments of known current drugs, but that's resulted in little or even no improvement to the existing drug therapies. So the pharmaceutical companies are trying, they just can't figure out how to make their antiviral drugs any better. At the same time, the growing demand for new drugs and natural therapeutic products is a matter of extreme necessity to face the emergency of multi-resistant viral pathogens. Preventative and curative measures should always be in the hands of health authorities, like Anthony Fauci, to ensure the control of epidemics. Remember, this is 2017, such as the recent Ebola virus in Africa outbreak, or arboviruses, particularly in Brazil, represented by the dengue, chikungunya, and Zika viruses. David, read the next part.
Or worldwide pandemics, such as influenza and HIV.
Wow.
For example.
Yeah.
This is 2017. I'm not really sure. Are we in a pandemic 3 years later? Maybe.
It was crazy.
It was in the preseason for it right then.
So we're about down to about 5 minutes, Dr. Artis.
Well, here we go. You ready? Therefore, prospection, screening, and all other phases of biological activity, validation, clinical development of animal venom peptides represent an essential scientific investment for protecting and perpetuating humankind.
Oh, yeah.
They believe in order to keep humanity on the planet, to save them from all the viruses being spread all over the world, we need to start injecting them all with drugs made from animal venoms. The one thing we all are wired to run from, they want to inject inside of you. Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
All right, so here we go. We only got a few minutes. If you want to know if they've actually already figured out how to do this, I'm going to show you. Here's Paul F. Reed with Celtic Biotech. I'm Russell Reed from his biography. Ready? Starting with the blue sentence. At the beginning of that same sentence, it starts from 1993 to 1996. That's 30 years ago, Stacey and David. Dr. Reed was employed by the United States Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, Maryland, the same place Judy Mikovits worked, under a grant from the National Research Council in Washington, D.C. Listen to this. This is our government giving this guy money from 1993 to 1996. Under the grant, he was responsible for the expression and purification of a variety of neuroactive components, neurotoxins from snake venom, and grow them in bacteria and yeast systems and purify that venom material with expansion to large-scale vaccine production. This is everything I'm showing you they think they can do now. This is 30 years ago.
Wow.
We paid this guy to develop large-scale vaccine production from neurotoxic snake venoms. And did he ever figure it out? Check this out. This is Paul F. Reed. You'll see his name top right at the bottom of the top part. You'll see Paul F. Reed's name.
Okay.
Receptor Pharm Incorporated. And this invention is credited to him July 20th, 2010. Let's read it. What did they get a patent for from our United States government? Detoxified cobra venom and its constituent neurotoxins have been reported to have potent antiviral activity. It also has the potential application to act as a method to protect individuals from contagious infectious agents as a substitute for antiviral vaccines. Its principal object of this invention is to provide a method for preventing and treating infectious diseases such as colds and flu. Really, I didn't know we even had a cold vaccine, but we need to inject ourselves with king cobra venom, bacteria and parasite infections and the like. Now we're going to read this. This is in the patent from 2010, and tell me this isn't what we're living in right now.
Okay.
Therefore, one supposes that king cobra venom, these products could be employed within the scope of an infection control and prevention strategy, such as currently adopted for flu season, for the elderly, the immune suppressed, and infant populations. This guy wrote, we can inject king cobra venom into babies, elderly and immune suppressed to help them with the spread of the flu every year. In addition, they can be deployed as a therapeutic role in viral infections or in association with standard treatments, they suppose, for bacterial and parasitic infections. Let's read this last highlighted sentence. In viral infections such as influenza, the composition, King Cobra venom in a vaccine, would provide advantages over vaccine-based strategies in that it does not have to be virus or subtype specific and would be readily accessible when, David?
During outbreaks.
During outbreaks and pandemics.
Wow.
And they're saying we can employ that system of like, hey, I'm getting my flu shot every year. You know, that concept, we could just get the masses that we're missing, that big chunk in the middle that aren't infants or elderly. We can get all of those people in that same system. We already got the mechanism.
These are just two publications where they mention venom-based vaccines would help us prevent outbreaks of pandemics and epidemics. This is the L-amino acid oxidase test. Cell Biolabs Incorporated sells it. Please, OBGYNs at home, women at home who can't get pregnant, please do this test. Do a urine sample, blood sample. Confirm the presence of L-amino acid oxidase. If it's in you, it's not published as an ingredient to the mRNA injections you would have received for COVID. And if it's inside of you, those people didn't tell you it was in there, but it absolutely could have caused your miscarriage. I'm Dr. Artis. I hope this was educational. I was trying to provide the warning. You guys are rocking. We love you. Thank you for allowing us to share this with people around the world. Our goal has been nothing short of saving lives and preventing further injury and harm worldwide. That's really the entire intent.
That is huge. You can go to thedrartisshow.com. Make sure you register for the newsletter. You can also text 40509. Text the word VAX for the presentation today. Dr. Artis, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for this information. We really appreciate it.
Are you having a hard time sleeping at night thinking, what are you going to do about your finances?
If you went back to 1920 and you had a $20 bill and you had 1 ounce of gold, you could go into a men's clothing store and you could buy an entire suit, the jacket, shoes, pants, belt, everything. Today, what would that $20 bill buy you? You couldn't buy a handkerchief for the $20 bill, but that 1 ounce of gold would still buy you, even today, it would buy you an entire men's suit, shoes, belt, pants, jacket, everything. That's the difference. But today, that change is happening faster than ever.
And we know a guy by the name of Dr. Kirk Elliott that we've known for over 25 years. He has 2 PhDs.
This is who we're actually using. This is who our friends and family are using. And he's a guy we trust completely. And in today's era, you need somebody you trust. So go to flyovergold.com and learn how to protect yourself against an inflating dollar.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Flyover Conservatives podcast with David and Stacey Whited. Please subscribe, hit the notification bell, and leave us a comment below. Lastly, if you enjoyed today's podcast, share with those who came to mind. Be blessed and make it a great day.